Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy speculation and advice. Now, along with the guys from GuillotineLeagues.com, here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to a COVID-free version of Fantasy Football Weekly. I'm Paul Charchian, back in studio. Yes!
I've never said it's good to see you, but it's good to see you, Charch.
I know, right?
In a long time.
Thank you. It is so good to be back. And for everybody who put up with me sounding like I was doing my portion of the show, my third of the show from an outhouse in Albuquerque, thank you for putting up with that. I really appreciate it. And it's great to be back. My co-hosts today, Scott Fish and Brian Johnson. Hello.
Hello.
And Scott, you haven't even been on the show in like a month.
I love that we all have, I love that we all have varying degrees of facial hair today.
I know. I grew in a COVID beard. Yeah.
I got the mustache. I'm bringing awareness to men's health with the awfulness of my mustache.
And it is bad.
It's not for... It's not for looks. It's for awareness.
I'm glad you know that.
I appreciate that.
Thanks. Over the course of the show, we'll answer three tough questions. We'll give you premature speculation. We'll give you nine players upon whom you can take a chance. And, of course, we'll break down every game fantasy style with letter grades. You know how it works. We begin, Scott, with the Lions taking on the Browns. It looks like Jared Goff's not going to go in this one, and I don't think there's – hardly a Brown to start outside of maybe Swift, and that's got to be it. Yeah,
Browns or Lions, it's bad on both sides. The passing game, I have three starting grades. I have DeAndre Swift with an A grade.
Okay.
He's coming up.
He still gets an A. Even no help from the quarterback position.
No help from the quarterback position, but he still gets all those balls thrown to him. Two of his three backups are injured. Two of his three other running backs in that backfield are injured. Running backs who have grabbed at least four balls against the Browns, basically the dual threat backs, they have torched the Browns. Those four backs scored eight touchdowns.
All right.
And averaged about 100 yards. So I got an A grade on Swift. I have a C grade on Hockenson despite the disastrous goose egg. I think it might be a little bit of a squeaky wheel game. Maybe Tim Boyle depends on Hockenson as a safe option.
I have a
C grade on him. I'm not confident.
You're braver than I am.
But the Browns have allowed six catches for 60 yards and a score in each of the last 3 weeks to tight ends. That's the average stat line. But in the passing game, I have everyone else on the bench, mostly because of Boyle, but also it's not a good spot. On the other side, I have the whole passing game on the bench again. Baker's topped 250 yards just once in the last 9 weeks and only two multiple score games. Most teams basically just run on the Lions. They don't have to throw. I can't trust Baker. He's still banged up. I have Landry on the bench because his best game is 71 yards and he hasn't scored all year.
Right.
I have Donovan Peoples-Jones on the bench who came up with an injury this week. And once he had that full job, they were shifting the top coverage to him.
Yeah. So rightfully so, by the way.
Yeah, rightfully so, but I don't trust him. But A grade on Nick Chubb, who will be back. Last time Chubb got 12 plus touches and failed to get 75 total yards was in 2019.
Wow.
He's gonna get 12. He's gonna get 16.
Yeah.
The seven backs who had 16 plus touches against the Lions, seven of those backs scored nine times. And six of them had 100-plus total yards.
Now, is there a chance that in a backup role, D'Ernest Johnson gets to that threshold?
I knew you would go there. In the two games that D'Ernest Johnson played with Nick Chubb this year and Kareem Hunt out, he had 35 total snaps, not touches, snaps. 13 touches for 47 yards in those two games.
Even against the Lions,
it's a good matchup.
Browns should get ahead. Tim Boyle could score easily 0 points in this game.
I think it's a Chubb day, but
nobody's arguing the Nick Chubb side of this.
Yes, I would not be flexing D'Ernest Johnson, but I can see your argument. So if you're really in dire straits.
Okay. Let's go over to the that was very brisk. Thank you. Let's go over to the Texans taking on the Titans. Not a lot of great starters here, but there are some Texans. Oh, wait. What game are we doing next?
Dolphins-Jets.
Dolphins-Jets, you say. Let's go to Dolphins-Jets then.
Because Texans-Titans is a take-home fest. We'll get to that a little later.
Okay,
so Dolphins at Jets. First meeting between these two divisional rivals, so we can't reference recent history. in this matchup, starting with the Miami side, the road team, and Tua Tagovailoa was going to be my take a chance on me quarterback, but it's too easy in this matchup. I'm giving him a B here for Tua. New York has allowed multiple passing touchdowns in five straight games. Over those five games, opposing passers are averaging a whopping 325 yards and 2.4 passing touchdowns. Solid B for Tua. Solid B for Jalen Waddle as well. It really doesn't matter who's playing quarterback for Miami. Waddle produces consistently. The one glaring difference, though, between Tua and Brissett is all the touchdown receptions for Waddle were thrown by Tua. And the Jets have surrendered five scores to wideouts over their last four games. Love Waddle in this game. Now for Miami's wide receiver, too. Albert Wilson and Isaiah Ford both had four catches and 80-plus yards in Week 10, but not going to throw any sea darts or harpoons here. Both are on the bench, but Mike Gesicki is not, who is really, truly the wide receiver, too, for Miami. He runs most of his routes from the slot or outside. He gets a B, was more like Mike Goose-Eggy last week.
I like that. But that's good.
Finds himself, nice. I think I someone tweeted me that, so I can't take full credit for it, but Gesicki finds himself in the perfect bounce-back spot against the Jets, who over the last five games have surrendered four touchdowns to the tight end position. During that same span, the very comparable Kyle Pitts posted a monster game with nine catches for 119 yards and a score. And like Gesicki, Pitts runs most of his routes from the slot or outside, so a great matchup for the quote-unquote tight end, Mike Gesicki. And lastly, for Miami, I'll give Myles Gaskin a B, only because it's an odd-numbered week. He only goes off in odd-numbered weeks.
Yeah.
In the even-numbered weeks, he wets the bed. But it is an amazing matchup. The Jets are allowing 189 combo yards and 2.2 touchdowns per game to opposing running backs. I will say, though, I will not be shocked if Salvin Ahmed outperforms Myles Gaskin.
I know. Gaskin, to me, is the hardest guy to start this week. Because you know the opportunity is so good. And he's flopped so hard so many times.
But again, not in odd-numbered weeks. So that scientific fact should hold true.
All right, Dan Quisenberry.
In week 11 here. Over to the New York side. Shockingly, a few guys to talk about. Of course, we'll start with Michael Carter, the most fantasy-relevant player on New York. Going to give him a C, though, just a C. Very strong splits with Mike White at quarterback, but New York is going with Joe Flacco in this game. And let's get it out of the way. Flacco is on the bench, by the way. So just a C for Carter. The Dolphins' run defense has become very stout against opposing backs, holding them to 60 scoreless yards per game over the last several weeks. The C's continue with Corey Davis. The Dolphins have yielded the third most red zone targets to wide receivers, and over their last five games, they've surrendered five scores to the position. The Dolphins secondary has also surrendered two 100-yard receivers and five touchdowns to wide receivers over their last five. So I do give Davis a starting grade with the C. And the once, I mean, he'll likely be shadowed by Xavien Howard, who was once a very scary corner.
Yes.
He's allowed seven touchdowns in his coverage, the most among cornerbacks this year. And one more starting grade for a Jets receiver. It's not Elijah Moore. It is Jameson Crowder. Miami has been very generous to slot receivers. They've yielded the most targets and allowed the most receptions to receivers running from the seams. And I did mention Flacco earlier. He's on the bench. Shocker, I know. You can't trust
that. Goes without saying. Ravens take on the Bears, and Lamar Jackson missed Wednesday and Thursday's practice. We came back Friday with whatever his mysterious illness is. We don't know what the illness is. I'm going to go with lumbago.
He gets sick more than a high schooler with a test. It's crazy.
A grade for Lamar Jackson. I like all his receiving options, as you'll hear in a minute. And I'll mention that Chicago's allowed the third fewest quarterback rushing yards, just seven per game. But they also haven't faced any mobile quarterbacks all year. So still like Jackson with an A grade. Marquise Brown missed Thursday's practice and Wednesday's practice with a thigh injury, but came back Friday. He's expected to go. Now, Chicago could shadow Marquise Brown with their best cornerback, Jalen Johnson. But they tried that against Mike Evans a few games ago, and Evans crushed him. So I think they're going to keep Jalen Johnson on one side of the field, and then that means that Marquise Brown's going to get plenty of plays against Kendall Vildor. a frequent whipping boy on this show. Vildor giving up a passer rating of 146 in his coverage. He is Pro Football Focus's 94th ranked cornerback, and that's why Marquise Brown gets an A grade. Rashad Bateman will also get plenty of Kendall Vildor. He's getting increasingly involved each week, and just based on his normal deployment, lots of Vildor in this game. Only five teams have allowed more wide receiver touchdowns than Chicago, and I think Bateman could easily find the end zone for the first time in his career.
Permission to throw out a nickname for Vildor?
Oh, please.
The Vildor is a jar.
Door's a jar? I mean, how about it? Can't he just be like an open book?
I suppose.
I mean, I don't know. Isn't that, you know, is he bad at read coverage? I don't know. I think there's a better angle on Kendall Vildor.
I'm going to go back to the lab.
All right, thank you. Yeah, workshop that, please. Mark Andrews, if I didn't say Bateman's a B, he's a B. Mark Andrews also a B. Second in yards among all tight ends. He remains an elite option. But it could be a tough matchup. The Bears had only allowed one tight end touchdown until their previous game before the bye when Pat Freiermuth scored twice. Since week two, they've held every opposing tight end under 50 yards. And that includes the like of Darren Waller and TJ Hockenson. So just the B grade on Mark Andrews, but I still like him enough here. Now, the running backs, it's a messy situation, and I'll do my best here with Baltimore's running backs. If Latavius Murray is healthy, presumably he returns to the starting role, but he's shaping up as a game-time decision. We don't know yet. And if so, he gets a C grade, and then Devontae Freeman would probably get enough touches where you'd be tempted to play him, but you probably shouldn't. But if Murray is out, then we'll upgrade Freeman all the way up to a B grade since he would get the overwhelming lion's share of the touches. The Bears are allowing 108 rushing yards per game on 4.6 yards per carry to opposing running backs, both sixth most. And as people probably know by now, they have ruled out Khalil Mack for the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. So whatever run support he would have lent will not be there. Okay, so let's go over to the Bears side of the field. I like David Montgomery here, B grade. Last we saw him before the bye, he put up an impressive game against a good Steelers defense, and he's even healthier now after the bye. Baltimore's top five in rushing yards allowed, giving up only 4 yards per carry, but they've given up 8 rushing scores, which bodes well for Montgomery, as Chicago calls running plays at the highest rate inside the 5-yard line. So I like Montgomery to score in this game, and so a B grade for him. Let's go to the passing game. I originally had a C grade on Justin Fields, but I've lowered him to a bench on news that Allen Robinson will not play in this game or is not expected to play in this game, listed as doubtful. Baltimore is allowing the most passing yards, almost 300 per game. Where Fields kills you is he's only averaging 24 passes a game. That's the lowest among all starting quarterbacks. Now, Baltimore usually sees 36 a game, so maybe Fields gets into the low 30s on attempts, and that could get him to an okay game here. But he's going to have to do it on Darnell Mooney and Cole Kmet. And I don't know that those guys can carry a passing offense. And also, Baltimore's been very good against rushing quarterbacks to this point of the season, allowing the second fewest quarterback rushing yards, just 7 per game. So I don't know the Fields is going to help you there either. And that's why he's on the bench. Mooney comes in with a C grade. Baltimore giving up 184 yards per game to opposing receivers. That is 8th most. They've also allowed a receiver to post at least 84 yards or multiple touchdowns to receivers in 4 of the last 5. Mm. So there are opportunities for Mooney here. Marlon Humphrey, who used to be a great cornerback, has allowed 5 scores and a passer rating of over 100
wow.
in his coverage, which is not like
surprising.
Him. It is a little bit odd. So an opportunity for Mooney there. And then Cole Kmet, I had him on the bench originally and then ultimately decided on a C grade coming off a career best game. 8 targets, 6 catches, 87 yards against Pittsburgh. And it's a good opportunity for a defense that struggled against tight ends. Ravens are bottom 7 in receptions, yards, and scores to tight ends. And the Ravens had that really brutal early season.
Good ones, middle ones, and bad ones.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say.
All levels they're giving up.
Yeah, you know, at one point early on, I'm like, well, it's like Travis Kelce and
Darren
Waller. And you know, but really, even since then, they've been susceptible.
Even the lower end tight ends are scoring.
Exactly.
Yep.
I like the way you think, Scott Fish. When we come back, hopefully you'll like the way we think about 9 players not normally in your starting lineup. It's called Take a Chance on Me. Find some guys off the waiver wire that can help you this week when we return Fantasy Football Weekly. Take a chance on me. Nine players not normally in your starting lineup. I want to mention, by the way, shout out to the local Minneapolis band, I believe called Soap the Band, that was nice enough to record this for us, which is pretty damn awesome.
That's awesome.
And I have not given them a shout out by name yet this year, and I apologize for that.
We got to go see them play.
We should. Soap the Band, reach out. Let us know how we can support you, because you've helped us. And now we're going to help you at the quarterback position. Scott Fish, give us a player under the radar that could be available for people to pick up and play.
I'm not sure exactly how under the radar he is, but he's still under about 20% owned, which is just ridiculous. And we've talked about this before, that he needs to be rostered more. Jimmy Garoppolo.
Agreed.
Yeah, the Jags held down Wentz and Allen recently. But before that, they'd given up 5 300-plus-yard days, 5 multi-touchdown scores. Even Allen got a bunch of work done on the ground. And Jimmy G seems to be running it in now that he knows that Trey Lance is on his field, on his heels. He's running scores in. But Jimmy has multiple touchdowns in 3 straights, and all his weapons are healthy now. So give me Jimmy G.
Yeah, the fact that all the weapons are healthy, to me, is the big part of that story.
I should have just said that and moved on.
Yeah, right, you could have right there.
That's wasting
enough.
Time.
That's enough. Quarterback position, Brian.
The Raiders, Derek Carr at home against the Bengals. It is garbage time yet again. Since he is coming off their bye, so they've had some time to prepare for this one. But still, over the Bengals' last 2 games, they've surrendered 5 passing touchdowns to Baker Mayfield and Mike White. This game should be pretty high scoring. It's very simple. Vegas thinks so. It has the second highest over-under on the Sunday slate at 50.5 points. I like the Raiders to rebound here at Derek Carr.
I'm going to go with Cam Newton. You guys know I've been very skeptical of Newton in the past, but this is such a fascinating matchup. He gets to go up against arguably the worst pass defense in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Washington ranks 29th in passing yards allowed and dead last in passing touchdowns allowed. What makes this particularly fascinating is he's going up against his old coach. Ron Rivera knows where all the bodies are buried with Cam Newton.
Boy.
All the deficiencies, all the problems in his game, and the good things in his game.
Mm.
So can the old coach scheme up a way to stop Cam Newton? I don't know that you can stop him from running in a touchdown. And I think there's a good chance he does that here. The last mobile quarterback that Washington has seen, well, the only mobile quarterback that Washington has seen was Daniel Jones. And you maybe remember early
week
in the season.
Week 1, right?
2. He ran all over 95 yards in a touchdown in that game.
That was
so
huge, yep.
I think one way or another, Cam finds his way to a good game.
Well, two snaps, 2 touchdowns last week, right? Extrapolate
9 snaps,
that.
Well, the first two.
Yeah,
the first two. At one point, he was 2 for 2. That's right. Let's go to the running back position. Scott, who you got?
I have Jeff Wilson Jr., which is starting to turn into an even better start now. Eli Mitchell is now doubtful. Of course, James Hasty is out. Hasty is out. And the only other backs are Trey Sermon, who has done nothing all year, and they seem to hate him. And
clearly
then,
in the doghouse.
And then Trenton Cannon, who's a special teams guy. This is a 49ers team that has had the running back touch the ball 27 times per game over the last 4. And every back that has had 10-plus touches against the Jags has topped 60-plus yards. I think Wilson gets 10-plus touches.
Oh, easy. That could be first half touches.
If Mitchell plays. If he doesn't play, he could get 20-plus.
Yeah, Mitch, and I don't think Mitchell goes.
I don't either.
If he's doubtful at this point.
Yeah.
He's been banged up for a long time. He needs a week off to heal. Let's go to your running back, Brian.
Who doesn't want to go back to Vegas? So I'm going to do the same. Kenyon Drake of the Raiders.
I tried this angle last week. Didn't work.
It did. Well, the second time's a charm. I know that's not how the saying goes, but it will be this week. I like Drake against the Bengals, who over the last 2 games have allowed 231 combo yards and 2 touchdowns per game to opposing running backs. I know Josh Jacobs is the lead back for Las Vegas, but there should be some scraps left over for Drake on the ground, but this is all about the receiving angle. Despite having their bye, the Bengals have yielded the second most targets and the second most red zone targets to running backs and are top 3 in the most catches and yards allowed to the position.
Your lead running back for Tennessee is not Adrian Peterson. It is Donta Foreman. And Foreman gets a great opportunity against the Texans, allowing the second most rushing yards and the 4th most rushing touchdowns per game. And basically, this Texans defense, they've shut down half the defense or traded away or otherwise or without half their defensive starters at this point. Foreman had 78 total yards last week against a far tougher Saints defense, and he had triple the output of Adrian Peterson and Jeremy McNichols. And the icing on the cake, McNichols isn't playing this week. And Adrian can't catch. So the passing work out of the backfield may very well go to Foreman as well. A delicious opportunity.
He almost looked like Derrick Henry out there with a different
number. He's so big, isn't he? I forgot how big Foreman is. Yeah. Dude's giant.
Well, I forgot he was in the league, too.
Well, yeah, that too. That's because the Achilles injury, man, you guys don't come back from that as a general
rule.
Well,
it bodes well for Cam Akers. Sorry
it
to
does,
go off track
although,
a little
but
bit.
But Foreman's like 3 years off his Achilles.
True.
It's taken him a long time to get back. We'll find out. Let's go to the receiving options. Scott.
I'm going with Adam Trautman. I can't believe I'm adding Adam Trautman in here. But
wow.
The Eagles have been basically the 2017 Giants or the 2019 Cardinals right now. They've allowed the most yards, receptions, and touchdowns to tight ends. Seven different tight ends have tallied 9 touchdowns, scored 9 times.
9 times.
Trautman has 6-plus targets in 3 straight. He has 9 catches in the last 2 weeks. He's coming on.
We don't, of all our
great
all of our fish sounds, all of our animal sounds that we've got, we have a number of them at our disposal here, right?
And we don't have a fish.
We don't talk about
Tyler Bass.
We don't have a trout anywhere. No trout to be seen.
I was
going
to say,
if we talked about kickers, we'd have Tyler Bass, too.
Yeah, I know.
It makes total sense, Scott Fish going with Adam Troutman.
Yeah, go figure. Brian, who's your take a chance from your receiver?
We said the Texans and Titans were a take-on fest. I'm going with Houston's Nico Collins at Tennessee. Now, Houston's Danny Amendola saw the second most targets among Houston wide receivers last week. And Charge, one of your favorite players, Chris Connolly, is still getting some targets. But my gut is telling me to throw the harpoon at Collins in a very plus matchup. Opposing wide receivers are averaging more than 25 targets, 16 catches, and 212 yards per game versus the Titans. Wideouts are also averaging 1.5 touchdowns per game against Tennessee. And cue up that peacock, because my take a chance on me wide receiver last week, Marquez Callaway, scored against the Titans. Nico Collins is going to do the same this
week. I hope
you're
right. Boy. I'm in the same game, opposite side of the field. Marcus Johnson, a name many of you are not even familiar with, is your Julio Jones replacement for the Tennessee Titans. And he goes up against Houston like Dante Foreman does, and this is a secondary that's surrendered 6 receiver scores in their last 4 games. And Johnson's quietly been a favorite of Tannehill's in the non-Julio Jones games, where he's garnered a target share percentage of 24%, 16%, and 23% for Marcus Johnson. Got a 100-yard game last week. I think he has another good one here, Marcus Johnson.
I was dumb enough to sit Marcus Johnson over Cole Beasley, Chris Godwin, and Tyler Lockett in a dynasty league last week.
But you lived.
I still got him, though. I'm holding it. I'm going to play him this week. Okay, you're right. Good. I like the call.
Fantastic. Let's go on to our next matchup, Scott, which is the Colts taking on the Bills. Colts passing offense went belly up hard last week, and a much tougher matchup this week.
I was going to say, it's not getting much better here. The Bills have only allowed 6 passing touchdowns this year through 9 games. That's
amazing.
That's ridiculous. So I hope you're not counting on Carson Wentz. He did. he had a nice streak in there, but it came to an end last week. He's not getting anything this week. I'm still giving Michael Pittman a B, though. He just gets such a huge percentage of that team's volume. It's not the best matchup, but Pittman is almost a lock for 8 to 9 targets, 5 to 6 catches weekly. And the players that have gotten that kind of volume against the Bills have done pretty decently. So there's hope there, but don't hope for a score, though, because that just doesn't happen. Jonathan Taylor, however, I have a B grade on. I could be talked into an A, but it's just such a tough matchup. The reason I could be talked into an A, I'm doing a B, is that Derrick Henry crushed them for 156 yards and 3 scores. That's the only comparable to Jonathan Taylor that has played the Bills. Michael Carter had 82 and a score against the Bills.
Mm-hmm. Easier to run on the Bills than pass.
Yeah, all the other runners are not even remotely, like Michael Carter's probably, maybe Antonio Gibson had 100 total yards too.
Mm-hmm.
So there are backs that have done it against the Bills, and Taylor's right in that field. So I give him a B. On the other side, there's a whole lot of stuff that you just don't know where the scoring's going. I like Allen for an A grade. Like Wentz, Allen struggled against the Jag 2 weeks ago, but he rebounded big last week. This game, he gets a Colts D that is bottom 10 in almost every passing category, including allowing the most passing touchdowns. So A grade on Allen. Diggs gets an A because he's coming back around. He has 85-plus yards and or a score in 4 straight, grabbing at least 7 balls in each of them.
Yeah.
And he's top 60 yards in every single game. Like, he's got a super safe floor.
He does.
So this team is allowing the sixth most receptions, eighth most yards, and second most touchdowns to wide receivers. But I sadly just can't trust the other three wide receivers.
I know. Every time you think you got a read on which receiver might have a good game,
yeah,
and it turns around and flops.
Yeah, Sanders had a lot of touchdowns early in the year. Mm-hmm. Last week, Sanders' snaps went down, and Beasley had a couple huge plays. Davis had a couple huge plays. Beasley had a couple good games, but now he's got the rib injury that really took him out last week, and he might be slowed this week. So I have them all on the bench.
I can't blame you for that.
One might pop up. We just don't know who.
Right.
Dawson Knox, I have a C grade on. Last week, Dan Arnold had a decent 5-for-67 stat line earlier in the year. Mark Andrews and Mike Gesicki had really good days against them. I view Knox closer to those guys than all the mesh of tight ends that did 20-40 yards. So he's getting a C for me here.
Hey, don't forget about the 2-point conversion for Dan Arnold, the mini touchdown too. Don't dock on that.
The mini touchdown. Yes.
You need to get every little bit in. On the running game, I have them on the bench too, just like the wide receivers. Part of the reason the pass game should have a field day is because the Colts are sneakily a top five run defense right now. And with Breda coming on last week, stealing snaps and touches and touchdowns, it's a three-way split. Last week, it was 6 touches to 7 touches to 8 touches. I don't like that, so I have them all on the bench.
Yeah, and it's not the Jets again. So even though there were, four or five, was it four running back touchdowns?
Each of them scored, and Breda got two.
Twice.
Yep.
Just like we knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
Who didn't call Matt Breida?
Everyone.
First game that he hasn't been inactive since week three, scoring twice.
Yep.
Let's squeeze in one more matchup, Brian, because I think this one's going to be pretty short based on the fact that we've already talked about half of the players in this game. Texans taking on the Titans. I already told you two different Texans that I liked, including starting running back Donta Foreman.
Yeah, we'll start on the Texan side with guys we haven't talked about. Brandon Cook's going to give him a B. The move back to Tyrod Taylor at quarterback did not affect Cook's massive target share. He saw 13 targets last week at Miami. I said this earlier, opposing wide receivers are averaging more than 25 targets, 16 catches, and 212 yards per game against the Titans. That's why Nico Collins was my take a chance on me wide receiver. It also makes Tyrod Taylor worthy of a C dart. The Titans have surrendered the fifth most fantasy points to quarterbacks and mobile quarterbacks like Kyler Murray and Trevor Lawrence, both scored on the ground against Tennessee. But all the Texans running backs are not worthy of any darts unless they're tranquilizers. They're all on the bench. Over to the Tennessee side, A.J. Brown, an easy A here. Brown has seen the Texans four times in his career and has totaled 5 touchdowns against them, scoring in every game. He's also topped 100 yards in 3 of those 4 games. So this is a smash spot for Brown, and it could be a smash spot for Marcus Johnson, Church.
Yeah.
Here, take a chance on me, wide receiver. And I had a great write-up written for Jeff Swaim, tight end, but has been ruled out, unfortunately. He had distanced himself from Anthony Firkser and Michael Pruitt. So I'm going to give Firkser a C, though, here. Kind of a sleeper tight end that has been a massive disappointment, but
very much so.
An amazing matchup for the tight end for Tennessee. And I will go with Firkser again. Despite having their bye, Houston has yielded the second most red zone touches and have allowed the third most touchdowns to tight ends with 6. And 5 of those 6 tight end touchdowns have come over the last 6 games for Houston, where opposing tight ends are also averaging nearly 5 catches and 60 yards. So Anthony Firkser could finally come through for those that probably drafted him in best ball. But if you're desperate at tight end, go out and grab Firkser. Donta Foreman, like you said, Charge, was your take a chance on me running back. And, of course, you have to mention Ryan Tannehill, who outside of Jacoby Brissett, Baker Mayfield, and Mac Jones, Houston has surrendered multiple passing touchdowns in every game. Tannehill's been kind of a disappointment touchdown-wise.
Well, the rushing touchdowns have been saving him from fantasy irrelevancy.
But and I should have mentioned this is the first meeting between these divisional opponents, but the last time Tannehill saw the Texans at home last season, he went for 364 passing yards and 4 passing touchdowns.
Yeah.
Might do that again on Sunday.
I don't think he's got the receivers to do that at this point, but you never know. Maybe.
He's got Marcus Johnson. What are you talking about?
Yeah, well, there's that.
He doesn't have Jeff Swaim, though. That hurts.
That does hurt. final chances to join a Guillotine League is this week. We've got drafts over the weekend. If you still want to join, and there's still, 8 weeks of play left? Plenty of time, plenty of fun. You can still join a Guillotine League at guillotineleagues.com. When we come back, more matchup breakdowns, including Packers taking on the Vikings, what to expect from Kirk Cousins, Justin Jefferson, and Adam Thielen in a tricky matchup when we return to Fantasy Football Weekly. Welcome back. Fantasy Football Weekly, Paul Charchi and Scott Fish and Brian Johnson. You can follow us on Twitter if you'd like. Scott Fish is at ScottFish24. Yep. Brian Johnson is at BTXJ, and I am at Paul Charchian. You're just going to have to figure out how to spell it, which honestly is not that easy. Packers take on the Vikings in a matchup that has a number of fascinating angles, but let's start with A.J. Dillon assuming the workhorse role with Aaron Jones out. And maybe more important than the rushing opportunities is he's proven himself to be a capable receiver with 100 receiving yards over the last two games. And if he can pick up Aaron Jones's receiving duties, it cements Dillon as a high floor, high upside play this week. The Vikings run stuffer Michael Pierce had a setback on his injury and will miss several more games. In the last 3 weeks, Minnesota's bottom 10 in rushing yards and rushing scores allowed to running backs. So a nice opportunity for A.J. Dillon. In fact, he's my number four ranked running back this week. Love him. A grade for A.J. Dillon.
I'm in a league with him, and he did not draft himself. Now he's got to be regretting
that. Well, we got to hope he faces himself.
He did last week, but he won.
He beat himself.
Yep.
Let's go to the passing game. For Aaron Rodgers, a B grade. The Vikings, really tattered defense, has overperformed for several weeks now, and they get Harrison Smith back, their safety. They get their number one cornerback, Patrick Peterson, back. And since week three, Minnesota's allowed just 235 passing yards and 1.1 passing touchdowns per game. That's it.
That's not
much. And that was largely without those guys. Maybe the other shoe falls against a familiar rival here, Aaron Rodgers. And Rodgers was awesome against Minnesota last year, but that was a totally different Minnesota defense than this year. Rodgers has thrown exactly two touchdowns in five of seven games, and I've got him on about two touchdowns for this game as well. Devontae Adams is an obvious A, and I don't even need to expand on that really. But let's talk more about Randall Cobb and MVS that are... They were flirting with C's, but I can't quite get there because they just have so many 1, 2, and 3 catch games.
Yeah.
That even in favorable matchups where you look going in and go, well, this looks like a good one in the slot for Randall Cobb, and then you get two catches for 23 yards. Jeez. No reliability for these guys, and mostly the Vikings are getting beat by opposing number one receivers and not the other guys. So I've got bench grades on Cobb and MVS, and Alan Lazard is not expected to go in this game. Let's go to the Viking side and Dalvin Cook. 5 career games against the Packers, Cook averaging 19 touches for 126 yards and more than a touchdown per game. So I like Cook here. He's an obvious A start, and we'll be watching injuries here too. Whitney Mercedes is out, and Rashawn Gary is shaping up as a game-time decision. That could really weaken the front end of a defense that allows 4.1 yards per carry but has given up 7 rushing scores. I still think the Vikings' best path to victory lies through Dalvin Cook, and we're going to get a lot of use from Dalvin Cook in this game. A grade. It's a lot trickier for Kirk Cousins in this one. The Packers have become the league's most hostile pass defense. Over the past 3 weeks, they've completely shut down Kyler Murray, Patrick Mahomes, and Russell Wilson, holding them to averages of 199 passing yards and one touchdown between the three of them. The best way to shut down Kirk Cousins is to get pressure on Cousins, at which point he gets skittish and he starts throwing checkdowns and dump-offs. And the Packers' pass rush has been phenomenal of late, even if Rashawn Gary can't play. I worry that Cousins won't have time to get his receivers open downfield. Green Bay ranks number one in completion percentage and number two in yards per attempt. And this, it's the yards per attempt that worry me. I think it's going to be a lot of dump-off stuff from Kirk, and I'm nervous about that. So I've got just the C grade on Kirk Cousins. Let's talk about his receivers. Justin Jefferson was great last week, but a dramatically tougher matchup against a team that has not allowed any receiver more than 37 yards in the past 2 weeks, despite facing Patrick Mahomes and Russell Wilson. Green Bay hasn't given up a touchdown to a receiver in 3 weeks. Cornerback Kevin King has allowed just one touchdown, and rookie Eric Stokes has a passer rating of just 75 against him. These are good. These cornerbacks are playing way over expectation.
What a roller coaster ride for King. Went from like shutdown to sieve, and now back to shutdown again.
He's been good.
Yeah.
Jefferson's been super steady, and that's why he gets a B grade here. At least 80 yards or a touchdown in 6 of the last 7. Jefferson posted just 26 yards in each of his 2 matchups against Green Bay last year, though. So B grade on Justin Jefferson, C grade on Thielen. He's become somewhat touchdown dependent, and the Packers haven't allowed a wide receiver touchdown in 3 straight games, as I had mentioned earlier. There's just no soft matchups in the Packers' secondary. And as I said before, I worry about dump-off passes, which don't necessarily bode well for Thielen. Tyler Conklin gets a C grade coming off a 2-touchdown game. Packers have only allowed 4 touchdowns to tight ends, but they've surrendered the 2nd most red zone touches to tight ends, and they've given up the 9th most targets and the 6th most receptions to tight ends. So I think Conklin can get a little something done. So we'll give him a C grade.
You're going to blow into the conch shell.
I don't have anything like that, but
we should have a conch shell sound. Huh?
That could be to get the conch shell right there. That could be Adam Troutman right there. Thank you to Brett, our engineer.
Do you know what Bob Harris calls him? Football diehards, Bob Harris?
No.
The fish missile.
The fish missile. That's pretty good. I like that. I like it. What is your wife nickname, the fish missile?
this joke came up when I found that out.
I bet it did come up. I am not the first to make that joke.
You are blushing.
The Saints are purple right now.
The Saints take on the Eagles.
Yes, they do.
Trevor Siemian should be on your bench. I don't care that he's averaged 275 yards and 2 scores in his 2 full games last 2 weeks. The Eagles have allowed multiple scores 6 times, but they're all really good quarterbacks. Dak, Mahomes, Brady, Herbert types. Mm-hmm. The Jimmy G, Darnold, Golf, Bridgewater types, 226 or fewer yards for all of them.
Yeah.
And a combined 2 passing touchdowns.
Wow.
So they've held down the quarterbacks they should hold down. I have Siemian on the bench. Same with all of his wide receivers. Sorry, no take-on for Callaway this week, Brian.
All good.
Here's the full list of wide receivers to top just 60 yards.
Which isn't a lot.
Against the Eagles. CeeDee Lamb, Tyreek Hill, A.J. Brown, Keenan Allen, and Deebo Samuel.
Those are all top 10 wide receivers in the league, and the Saints don't have anybody close to that.
All the rest under 60 yards against the Eagles. So I have them on the bench. And of course, Adam the Fish Missile Troutman was my take a chance on me player. I have an A grade on Mark Ingram in 2021 somehow. Somehow I have an A grade on
Mark
Ingram.
But here's the thing. Neither starting tackle is in this game. That, to me, knocks him down a whole letter grade.
Oh, man. Kamara is out. Tony Jones is designated to return, but I don't think he gets returned for this game. It's going to be all Ingram. He had 18 touches last week. This Eagles defense has allowed the 7th most rushing yards and the 7th most rushing touchdowns, the 6th most receptions, 11th most receiving yards. And you're like, Mark Ingram, why are you mentioning receiving stuff? He's had 9 catches in the 2 games with Trevor Siemian.
He's actually catching passes from
Trevor Siemian. He's getting the goal line work. Maybe it's not the sexiest A grade out there, but it's an A grade.
All right, if you say so.
All right. On the other side, Jalen Hurts is an obvious A to me, but if you didn't already know, he has finished as a top 12 quarterback in 9 of 10 weeks. No other quarterback has done that 6 times this year. He's just always getting there with the rushing yards. Now he's added passing to that production. And this is a matchup against a team that's given up over 900 yards and 8 touchdowns in the last 3 weeks to quarterbacks. In the passing game, for all the wide receivers, Devonta Smith. A grade for Devonta Smith.
Yeah, I'm with you.
The Saints have allowed a 100-yard receiver in 3 straight games, 5 wide receiver touchdowns in that stretch. In just the last 2 weeks, Smith has 9 catches for 182 yards and 3 scores. He's coming on right as Hurts' passing is going up. I do have Quez Watkins on the bench, even though I admit he could break a big one. They're going to get passing yards here. It's just tough to trust because he's only topped three catches once in this season.
Wow.
Dallas Goedert, he gets a C if he goes, which it should. It sounds like he's going to go.
Yeah, I think so.
So I have a C grade. He generally grabs 2 to 6 balls. In his last three full games, he averaged over 60 yards per. So I got him with a C grade. And I have Jordan Howard and Boston Scott on the bench because Miles Sanders might come back.
It sounds like he's going to play.
Yeah, but even if he didn't, it's a bad matchup against the Saints run defense. Only Christian McCaffrey did well against him, and it took him 24 attempts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to get 24 attempts. Although the Eagles have shockingly turned into a pretty run-heavy team.
Very run-heavy.
Yeah. Yep. Jalen Hurts, you can't tell from the box score if you didn't watch his game. He's coming off the best game of his career. He looks like a different quarterback now.
Yep.
The poise, the decision-making, the accuracy, all really remarkably improved for Jalen Hurts. His ascension could be starting right now.
And they
now.
Might have three top 15 picks if they don't need a quarterback.
No, that'll mean a lot. Brian, we've got 4 minutes to work through Bengals Raiders. I think you can do it.
Let's give it a go. Starting on the Bengals side, Joe Mixon gets an A. The Raiders are allowing 143 combo yards and more than one total touchdown per game to opposing running backs. Mixon, a rare breed of bell cow in these times, meaning he's also a very good receiver. Last week, Kansas City's Darrell Williams caught 9 balls for 100-plus yards and a touchdown in Las Vegas. Easy A for Mixon. Just a B for Ja'Marr Chase. Las Vegas has only allowed one receiver to top 100 yards. That came back in week 2, but they have allowed 6 wide receiver touchdowns over their last 4 games. So for that reason, I'll give T. Higgins a B as well. Over the last 3 weeks, Higgins has seen just 3 fewer targets than Ja'Marr Chase and is averaging nearly 80 yards per game during that span. Higgins hasn't scored since week 2. But is due for some positive touchdown regression, in my opinion.
Agreed.
And Tyler Boyd, going to give him a C, only in PPR leagues. I would not play him in standard, but he will face Raiders slot corner Nate Hobbs, who owns an 88% catch rate in his coverage. So I like Boyd in PPR with a C. I also like C.J. Uzoma enough to give him a C. The Raiders have surrendered 6 touchdowns to tight ends, which is the third most, and all those touchdowns have come over their last 6 games. And Joe Burrow gets a B, not much explaining here, when all of his weapons got starting grades.
Yeah, right.
So easy start for Burrow. Over to the Raiders side, and Darren Waller, who's been pretty much a disappointment this year, but still gets a B here. Over their last 3 games, Cincinnati has allowed nearly 60 yards per game to tight ends, as well as a touchdown to the position in each of their last 2. Hunter Renfrow gets a B as well. The Bengals have allowed a wide receiver touchdown in 4 of their last 5 games. Only the Detroit wide receivers did not score during that span, which is totally understandable.
Yes, it is.
And if a Raiders wideout is going to score, it's most likely going to be Renfrow, who, despite having his bye, has seen the 4th most targets inside the 10-yard line among all players this year. And Bryan Edwards, going to give him a C. Edwards has seen the 2nd most targets among Raiders wide receivers since the Henry Ruggs incident, and he did have 88 yards and a touchdown last week, so he's worth a harpoon toss, or is it a heave? Would you throw a harpoon? Do you toss it, you heave it? I don't know.
I launch, shoot? I mean, it comes out of some kind of a gun-like mechanism. I think you shoot it.
But
shoot a harpoon.
I mentioned it earlier. This is a suspected shootout with a 50.5 over-under, so Edwards gets a C. Josh Jacobs limited with a knee injury all week, but he should play in this game. Going to give him a B. Over their last 2 games, the Bengals have allowed 231 combo yards and 2 touchdowns per game to running backs.
Those are huge numbers.
Huge numbers. Kenyon Drake is the more of the receiving back for Las Vegas, but Jacobs has averaged 4 targets over his last few games. And despite having their bye, the Bengals have yielded the 2nd most targets and red zone targets to running backs and are top 3 in the most catches and yards allowed to the position. That is why Kenyon Drake was my take a chance on me running back. And I coupled that all together with Derek Carr as my take a chance on me quarterback.
All right. Nicely done. That was a lot of talking in a very short time span.
Take a sip of water here.
All right. You go do that, and we will prepare for hour number 2. When we start hour number 2 in moments, 3 tough questions, including some insight onto Cam Newton. Find out if you can go 3-0 as you play along with our co-hosts. 3 tough questions, hour number 2, Fantasy Football Weekly, coming up next. Welcome back. Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchi and Scott Fish and Brian Johnson with you. This is a game we like to call Three Tough Questions.
Tough question number one.
What Fantasy Football Weekly letter grade will Cam Newton most often get? An A, a B, a C, or a bench grade, Scott?
So Cam Newton last year finished as a top 14 quarterback nine times.
How many?
Nine times. A top 10 quarterback six times. And that's with almost no receiving weapons.
No passing at all. Eight passing touchdowns last year.
Yep, and 12 rushing. We gave him a C and a ton of bench grades last year because we could never trust the passing. That's what he was getting last year. Now, I think we can trust the passing just a little bit more.
Even without Dan Arnold?
Even without Dan Arnold, he's got all these weapons. He's got McCaffrey. He's got Joe Brady, who, you know, I feel I trust. Well, I suppose Josh McDaniels is okay over in
New England. He's done okay for himself.
But mostly, his entire schedule is filled with bottom seven defenses during the fantasy season. He plays the Saints. He plays the Bills. Those are maybe the only two matchups that are tough. The rest are bottom seven pass defenses. I'm going with B grade.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to go All high right. on this.
All right. Brian, which letter grade will Cam Newton most often get on this show the rest of the way?
Well, yeah, when I first saw this question, I was like, oh, it's got to be a bench because you just can't trust Cam Newton. But then you looked at the schedule, which Scott just mentioned, and it's pretty soft at Buffalo and at Miami. Two tough matchups remaining for him, but outside of that, he's got a very plus schedule, and I would have went B as well if they held on to the surging Dan Arnold, but since he's in Jacksonville now, I'm just going to go with C for the most part for Cam Newton, but he is startable, and who would have thunk it? Cam Newton, starting quarterback for the tail end of the season.
I did not expect it either. I've got C grade as the correct answer. Tampa twice as a C grade, in part because they're getting that whole secondary back healthy finally. Sean Murphy Bunting coming back, and this is a trickier Tampa defense to throw upon than it used to be. And nobody of any ilk runs on Tampa very much. So the Tampa ones, Buffalo's tough. You say Miami's tough. I don't agree. C grade here this week. He's got a C grade. Did we already give that? Do we do that matchup? No. Yes. We already.
Yeah,
no,
take
no we haven't done
me,
it.
Yeah,
he was my take a chance on me guy. Yeah. C grade for this week. Atlanta and New Orleans. Also, C grade.
I knew I was going a little high.
I think you were going
a little high. Tough question number two.
Trade deadlines are approaching, and you could turn Deebo Samuel into almost any receiver in the league. Are you selling high, or are you holding, Brian?
Yeah, Deebo has been pretty incredible. His worst receiving game was he had three catches for 58 yards, but he ran a touchdown in that game to salvage that stat line. Mm-hmm. He had another rushing touchdown last week on top of a receiving touchdown. His worst statistical output was five catches for 52 yards. That's still double-digit points in PPR. There's only one wide receiver I would trade him for, and that's Cooper Kupp, who just has a slightly higher floor and ceiling than Deebo. But for the most part, I don't know what my answer would be. So I guess I would say, yes, I would trade him for Cooper Kupp, but that's it.
No, I mean, that's the only wide receiver. No. That's effectively a no.
I don't think
it's pretty much a no. I'm holding strong on Deebo Samuel.
You're holding Deebo Samuel. Scott, what about you? Are you holding Samuel or are you selling high?
I'm holding. He's doing it all. He's hard to guard. With Kittle and Ayuk taking up defenders, they can't pin him down with the top receiver. Their running back issues are somehow giving him goal line carries inside the five as
How
well.
About that?
The 49ers have seven games left in our fantasy season.
Yeah.
And only one of those teams ranks in the top half of the league against wide receivers. More than that, this is the time of year where I start to want to bolster my starting lineup. And Deebo's the kind of guy I'd want to trade for. I'd trade two pieces. I'm not going for depth. So I'd rather just keep Deebo.
Neither of you mentioned the injury issues that have haunted Deebo Samuel in the past. And I think that's the only reason you to trade Samuel is you put your finger in the wind and you just go, you know what? I'm not rolling the dice on Samuel anymore.
It's Keenan Allen. It's a thing until it's not.
It's right, and that's how I look at almost everybody with injuries until you get to like a Will Fuller level of injury history.
Yes,
I tend to say I'm not going to bank on a guy getting hurt.
Yeah, we care so little about the injury thing, we didn't even mention it.
You didn't even mention
there
it.
There you go.
You guys hit on the schedule stuff. I looked through this. He's going to have an A grade in every game to week 18. And week 18, you shouldn't be playing anyway.
That's so why I said fantasy season.
It doesn't even matter.
I pulled that out.
So, yeah, and Cooper Kupp would be the only guy that I would exchange him for. And that's we're not saying the question was not phrased. Is there any player you would possibly trade him for?
Right.
So the answer on Deebo Samuel is hold.
Real quick, I went and looked back at preseason ADP. Brandon Ayuk, wide receiver 23. Deebo Samuel, wide receiver 35.
Ooh.
Whoopsies.
Although, by the way, it's a quick side note. This easy schedule for San Francisco also applies to Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, buy low on Ayuk right now while you're at it. Maybe that should have been the tough question.
Tough question
right there.
Number three.
What is the appropriate level of concern for Mike Williams? None, some, or a bowel-loosening level of existential dread? Scott.
It depends on the manager. Going with what Brian was just talking about, for the manager who drafted Mike Williams 120th overall on the 10-11 corner where his ADP was, right along guys with Callaway, Marvin Jones, Jonnu Smith, Curtis Samuel, Michael Gallup, Sony Michel, Jamal Williams, Devin Singletary, Tyler Higbee. For the people that drafted him among those, they should be fine. They understood over the last 2 years he's a 30 to 60 yard guy who occasionally has blow-up games and touchdowns. So they should only worry some because maybe their concern is his blow-up games were all in the early of the season and now he's done for the year with the big blow-up games. For the manager who traded for him after that hot start, they traded real – they should be at, woke up, ate some leftover Chipotle, drank a pot of coffee, and then they jumped on a treadmill level of existential bowel-loosening dread. That's where those managers should be. But I think for most managers, it should be some because people realize what Mike Williams is.
Some is your official answer to that in a very roundabout, circuitous way. Brian, what's the appropriate level of concern for Mike Williams? None, some, or... blowed.
That's a very tough response to follow up to. I got to go with just some, too, considering he had 116 roughly PPR points, Mike Williams, in his first five games. And over his last four, like 24 total PPR points. And injury, always some sort of concern with Mike Williams. Knock on wood, he won't get hurt for the remainder of the season. But like Fish said, it's not like he's underperforming based on a super high ADP, so you can't be blowed on him unless you traded for him, but like Fish said as well. But just in a nutshell, just some. It's still a high-potent offense, and hopefully he can regain some of that early season magic. Some.
Where you drafted Mike Williams has nothing to do with your appropriate level of panic right now as you're staring into the gaping maw of the fantasy playoffs. It doesn't make any difference. The correct answer is blowed. He, other than weeks 1, 2, 3, and 5, which is a long time ago, he's wide receiver 90. 9-0. He has always been a boomer bust player. And here's the key part that you guys missed. Can you count on Mike Williams to power you in three straight playoff games? Hell no.
I don't hope for my 10th or 11th round pick to
it
do that.
It has nothing to do with where you drafted him.
In fairness,
Justin Herbert's
been a little off. I think he starts to come around, too, and that should raise the bar for Mike.
Washington takes on the Panthers. And for Antonio Gibson, what a freaking head-scratcher this guy is. When you think you should bench him against the Saints and the Bucs, he scores twice in both games. And these other matchups that look highly exploitable, you get nothing out of Antonio Gibson. So what do you think against the Panthers? Let's take a look. He did look much healthier last week, and he got a lot of usage. Panthers should continue as a plus opportunity for him. In the last three games, Carolina's allowed the eighth most yards per carry, despite seeing only the 21st most carries. Carolina's very tough to pass upon, and the game script should favor Gibson here with plenty of work. I'm giving him a B grade in this game. Taylor Heinicke in the passing game is on the bench in a brutal matchup against the league's number one pass defense by yards. They're giving up just 191 passing yards per game. That's Carolina. Over the past four games, that number drops even lower. Over the last month of games, Carolina's giving up 158 passing yards per game. That's nothing. It's a disaster for opposing quarterbacks. And less than one touchdown per game. The midseason acquisitions of Stephon Gilmore and C.J. Henderson give the Panthers arguably the deepest set of cornerbacks in the league. Heinicke's on the bench. Ricky Seals-Jones is out with a hip injury. They might ask Logan Thomas to come back a week early, but you can't start him either. That just leaves Terry McLaurin. Just a C grade here. And it's just based on his personal talent. Despite averaging nine targets in the last five games, McLaurin only has reached 60 yards once and scored once. Those aren't great stats.
Nope.
The Panthers are allowing the fewest yards to receivers, just 80 per game. And, I mean, if McLaurin and the rest of the receivers have to divvy up 80 yards, McLaurin gets 40, half of it himself, and that's it? It's tough. In fact, you know what? I'm putting McLaurin on the bench. Forget it. I just talked myself out of it. Bench grade, Terry McLaurin. Let's go to Carolina. Christian McCaffrey is an obvious A. Let's move on to the passing game. We've already talked about Cam Newton. He was my take-a-chance-to-me quarterback. If I didn't make this clear, though, Matt Rule's come out and said that P.J. Walker's going to get play in this game, too.
Yep.
But I don't think it's going to be translate into enough, especially, obviously, nothing on the ground. It won't take any rushing work away from Cam that I think you need to necessarily downgrade Cam Newton. So C grade there, and P.J. Walker siphons off some, but hopefully not too much work. D.J. Moore gets a B. Washington's allowing 201 yards per game to receivers. That is second most, and has allowed multiple touchdowns to the position in five of the last seven games. Moore should have no trouble exploiting Kendall Fuller, giving up a passer rating of 92, and William Jackson, whose Pro Football Focus is 112th rated cornerback. So I like DJ Moore here. I was tempted to let you throw a dart on Robbie Anderson, but I just can't do it.
That would have been great. Bench Terry McLaurin, start Robbie Anderson.
It would have been tempting, but he's coming off a 2-yard game and a 0-yard game. I can't do it.
I know.
But the matchup is clearly bent in Anderson's favor, and I'd like to tell you to start him, but I can't do it. I'm sorry.
And anything to the Cam and Robbie stood next to each other for the press conference?
That might be a – do they share a locker, I think, is what we really want to know.
Did they have breakfast together? Yeah,
Maybe that's the case. Hey, we're still forming new guillotine leagues at guillotineleagues.com. And, of course, the format, as you know, no head-to-head. Instead, the low-scoring team gets cut every week, and all the players go to the waiver wire, where you get to feast on a whole draft's worth of players. All you have to do is not finish last, and the last team standing wins the whole thing. Still 8 weeks of goodness left.
Yes.
In the guillotine season. You've never experienced roster building like you have in a guillotine league. GuillotineLeagues.com. When we come back, 49ers take on the Jaguars. We'll tell you what to expect from the passing attack of the 49ers when we return to Fantasy Football Weekly. Football Weekly, Paul Charchi and Brian Johnson and Scott Fish with you. We continue through the matchups, fantasy style, letter grades on all the players who matter. 49ers take on the Jaguars. Scott, you already told us about the running game.
I did.
We love Jeff Wilson in this opportunity. Although the Jaguars' run defense is better than people think by a sizable margin, just 3.7 yards per carry. But if you tell me any one 49ers back is going to get the vast majority of the work, I'm interested.
Especially, how much they run it.
So let's talk about the passing game. Jimmy Garoppolo.
He was my take a chance on me quarterback. Yeah. Obviously, I like him here. His receiving options, Deebo Samuel, I have a bench grade on.
Oh, sure you do.
No, I think it's just obvious at this point. He's an A grade, so I'm going to move on to Brandon Ayuk, who I have a C grade on. He has 19 targets in the last 3 weeks. 15 wide receivers have topped 60 yards and or scored on the Jags this year. 15 of them.
Wow.
That's basically two a week. So, or closer, one and a half, two a week, whatever. The target volume he's getting, I think he's in for a decent day. Most of those days were off of yards because the Jags have only allowed six touchdowns to wide receivers, and that's four different players.
Wow.
So only four wide receivers have scored on the Jags. So you got to hope for yards.
Quietly, the Jags defense is pretty good.
Yeah, it's not terrible.
Yeah.
It's not terrible. George Kittle, I have an A grade on. He scored in back-to-back games for the first time in his career.
I didn't know
which
that.
Which is crazy.
Wow.
17 targets in the last two games. Four tight ends have seen six or more targets against the Jags. Their average stat line, 5.5 catches for 75.5 yards.
Oh, we take that from Kittle.
Yeah. And those four tight ends that did that, they scored three times.
All right, even better.
Big day for Kittle. Over on the Jags side, I have Dan Arnold as the only player in the passing game with a grade.
Damn right.
That's it?
Yes, that's it.
Wow. Not even James Robinson.
Passing game.
Oh, passing game.
Yes.
Sorry.
Trevor Lawrence bench grade because the 49ers have allowed one multiple passing touchdown game since week four, and in those six games, opposing quarterbacks are averaging 159 yards per game. That's terrible. 159 from a quarter, and the wide receivers. Marvin Jones hasn't topped 35 yards in three straight. Chenault hasn't topped 25 yards in three straight. Agnew is the wild card. If you need a real dart throw, he's getting 5+ targets. He gets runs. He can break off big plays. He's had a great game in four of the last five.
He's the gadget player we thought Laviska Chenault was going
to
be.
He's the gadget player that Urban wanted ETN to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a tough matchup, but I have him on the bench, but a dart throw C is okay too.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Arnold is the B grade I gave here. You got to buy in if you haven't yet. 60+ in four plus catches in those same four games. Sure, last week all of his stats came in one drive. Who cares? He got him. We don't care for fantasy.
Hey,
purposes.
He was tackled at the 1 yard line too. Don't leave that out. He should add a touchdown.
The 49ers have allowed a tight end touchdown in three of the last four. Dan Arnold has no touchdowns on the year, but maybe he gets it this week.
Tackled at the 1 yard line. Ben had the mini touchdown.
James Robinson, a B grade. This is my, I don't care that he's got two injuries he's nursing. He keeps playing through them and he gets so much work. Three of the four 16+ touchbacks had 100+ yards and scored. So I think Robinson gets that kind of volume and has a decent day. I'll give him a B because of his injuries.
And don't forget Dan Arnold, in-depth knowledge of the 49ers from his time spent at Cardinals last year.
Because he played with the Cardinals and they met twice a year.
Exactly.
And
huge advantage for my man Dan.
Okay. Speaking of Cardinals, Cardinals take on the Seahawks. We already know for sure that Hopkins is out of this one. They say Kyler Murray is a game-time decision here, but with the looming bye week, I don't think he's going to go. We'll find out.
I'm reading he's trending towards playing. This is a pretty important game for the Cardinals.
It's become more important with last week's loss.
So I'm going to give Murray the C, assuming he plays. If he doesn't play, he's on your bench, of course. And I would bench Colt McCoy if McCoy gets the start. Because over Seattle's last six games, they have allowed 0, 1, 1, 1, and 1. I think I left another one off their passing touchdowns to opposing quarterbacks.
Let's give Seattle some credit. They were a disaster in the opening four-ish weeks of the season, and they've gotten a lot better.
Yeah, not quite back to the Legion of Boom days, but that secondary is playing pretty well. But I will give Murray the C if he goes. But don't expect too much running from Murray. He wasn't doing that before the ankle injury. And like you said, DeAndre Hopkins ruled out. That doesn't bode well for Murray. So let's talk about the wide receivers that will play. I'm going to give Christian Kirk and A.J. Green both a C. I'm going to give Kirk the high C in honor of the re-release of Ecto Cooler for the new Ghostbusters movie. So the high C for Christian Kirk. Tough matchup on paper for both. Just mentioned the Seattle secondary has played well. They have surrendered just one wide receiver touchdown over their last five games. And over their last four games, only one wide receiver has topped 41 yards, and that was Davante Adams, who had 78 scoreless yards last week on 11 targets. So don't expect too much from Christian Kirk or A.J. Green in this one, and don't expect too much from Zach Ertz either, but I will give him a C. The Seahawks have surrendered just three touchdowns all season, but fantasy-relevant options like Tyler Conklin, Tyler Higbee, and Dan Arnold all had pretty good games against Seattle.
We said fantasy-relevant.
Absolutely. Dan Arnold, very fantasy-relevant. Got a B from my boy Scott Fish. It doesn't get more relevant than that. James Conner, talk about fantasy-relevant, leads all running backs with 12 total touchdowns, 11 rushing. What were the odds on James Conner to lead the NFL in rushing touchdowns prior to the season? Like,
I'm sure
plus 10,000?
Yeah, probably.
Something like that?
Yeah, probably.
Man, he's been a league winner to this point. I'm going to give him an A.
By the way, people that listen to this show in the preseason, We talked about the red zone and the inside the five usage. Yeah. And we told you Chase Edmonds never touches the ball. And we told you Kyler Murray doesn't run inside the five.
Absolutely did.
So we identified that early on this show.
Absolutely. And we expect Connor to touch the ball a lot in this one. The Seahawks are allowing 180-plus combo yards and a touchdown per game to opposing running backs. So an A for Connor. No starting grade for backup running back Eno Benjamin, but he should be rostered in most leagues because if something were to happen to Connor, we got a starting running back on our hands with Chase Edmonds on IR and should be for a couple more weeks. That's it for the Arizona side. Over to Seattle, DK Metcalf, going to give him a B. Metcalf runs most of his routes from the left side of the field where he has a strong matchup against Marco Wilson, who has allowed touchdowns in five different games, wide receiver touchdowns, that is, in five different games this year. Metcalf did score in his latest meeting with the Cardinals last year. I should have mentioned again, I think every matchup has been like a divisional matchup, it feels like, in the show. Yeah, almost everyone.
It's a lot of them this
week. This is the first meeting between these two, but Metcalf did score at his last meeting with the Cardinals, our latest meeting with the Cardinals last year. But in three career games against Arizona, DK's total just six catches and 75 yards outside of that touchdown. Mm. Kind of a brutal history, but I will give him a B here. Just to see for Tyler Lockett, he has a tougher matchup in the slot against Byron Murphy, but it's tough to ignore Lockett's stat lines against Arizona from last season when he had nine catches, 67 yards, and a touchdown, and then 15 catches, 200 yards, and three touchdowns.
Dang.
The one that really propped up his overall numbers from last year. C for Lockett. Gerald Everett is on the bench. There are better tight end options out there. And Russell Wilson, going to give him a B, was shut out for the first time in his career last week, but that was somewhat excusable considering he was practicing against invisible players for a few weeks. But he was coming back from finger surgery. It was a cold weather game in Green Bay. The three best passers to face the Cardinals, who were Kirk Cousins, Matthew Stafford, and Aaron Rodgers, all managed to toss multiple touchdowns. And Arizona could be without all-pro safety Buda Baker, which would obviously bode well for Wilson. Wilson threw for 3 and 2 touchdowns in his two games against Arizona last year. And now Chris Carson was maybe going to make his return, but he is most certainly not now. Season-ending neck surgery for him. Wasn't going to give him a starting grade if he went. I'm not giving a starting grade to any Seattle running back anyway, even with Carson out. Arizona has allowed the eighth fewest fantasy points to running backs. Pete Carroll better let Russ cook in this one, because if not, there's no hope.
Let's hope Russ's finger responds a little better than last
week. Well, he was rehabbing for 19 hours a day.
He got shut out.
Yeah.
What if he had rehabbed for 20 hours a day?
Quit slacking, Russ.
Alex Collins has become like the game-long Leroy Hard. Give him 10 carries, he'll get you 40-something yards. Give him 20 carries, he'll get you 40-something yards.
It feels that way, doesn't it? I would have given Collins a C grade just based on the prospects of a rushing touchdown, but that's me.
Fair enough.
Cowboys take on the Chiefs, and let's mention Amari Cooper's out for this game. He was a late-week addition to the COVID list, so he's out. But I still like Dak Prescott with an A grade along with CeeDee Lamb, and Zeke is obviously an A grade as well. But let me just mention, the return of left tackle Tyron Smith helps everybody. So that's all good news there. Chiefs secondary has gotten a lot better. First, from comparing the first five games of the year to the second five games of the year, they're allowing 90 fewer passing yards and almost half as many touchdowns. So this has turned into a trickier matchup. But they've also seen a lot of wobbly quarterbacks in that span. So I still like Prescott in A level here, but it's not as strong an A as it was when Cooper was playing. And filling in for Cooper will likely be Cedric Wilson, and he is a dart throw if you want to give him a try. And he had to fill in for Michael Gallup for long stretches of the season, and he was getting you 2 and 3 catches a game. He found the end zone once in a while in favorable matchups. You could throw a dart at him.
As a maybe pre-spec, Cooper's going to miss Thursday's game against the Chiefs, too, and that's a great matchup for Wilson.
That's a good point, too. Michael Gallup bumps up. He was a C grade. I bumped him up to a B grade here. In his two games of work this year, he's run predominantly from the left side of the field where he sees Charvarius Ward, whose play has improved enough that it makes it so that it's not a slam dunk for Gallup, but I thought Gallup pretty good, and they threw to him plenty last week in his first game back.
Yep.
So we'll give a B grade to Gallup here. Dalton Schultz gets a little bit more likable as well with Amari Cooper out. Schultz quiet over the last 3 weeks, producing two of his lowest yardage outputs of the season, but should bounce back against Kansas City. Chiefs have surrendered the fifth most yards, the third most touchdowns to tight ends. Let's go over to the Chiefs side of the ball. We're back to the point where now all I have to do is just say Mahomes, Hill, Kelce, obvious ace. I've been mailing in these Chiefs conversations most of the year. The last couple of weeks, I've had to explain in more detail why Mahomes was a wobbly A or Mahomes was a B or why Kelce was a B instead of an A. But, you know, after last week, I think they're all right back here to obvious A starts. Let me mention this about the Cowboys secondary. For all the talk about Tavon Austin, and we bring this up a lot in the show, but and Austin's 8 interceptions, it's awesome. But he's giving up the second most yards of any cornerback. And opposite him, Anthony Brown's giving up the 4th most yards of any cornerback. So Mahomes, Hill, Kelce, all obvious A's, and they remain highly startable. Darrell Williams is your probable starting running back. Technically, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a game-time decision, but after getting very light use during the week in practice, I don't think he's going to go. And even if he does, I don't think he gets a big workload here. So we're going to keep Clyde Edwards-Helaire on the bench. Darrell Williams with a C grade. Besides struggling against really run-heavy offenses in Denver and New England, Dallas has been very good against runners. In all their other games, they're giving up just 62 rushing yards and a third of a touchdown per game on the ground. That would be third fewest and the fewest over the full season. So just the C grade on Darrell Williams here. And all the other wide receivers, the random dart throw you can attempt on Josh Gordon, Mecole Hardman, DeMarcus Robinson, Byron Pringle, no way.
Has Gordon even been playing?
I think he's got 2 catches as a Chief. That's it for Gordon.
Well, Pringle's the guy, right? The guy.
There is
Hardman is the most active out of that group, I guess. But for everybody who always tries to play any kind of guessing game with those guys, forget about it. When we come back, we're going to jump into the time machine as we talk through some premature speculation players that you will want to pick up this week that everybody else will be trying to pick up next week when we return to Fantasy Football Weekly. Final segment, Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchi and Scott Fish and Brian Johnson with you. This is a segment we like to call Premature Speculation. We give you 3 players you'll want to pick up this week that other people will be trying to pick up next week, but they're already on your roster. Scott Fish.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Latavius Murray, who somehow is only rostered in 26% of leagues.
That's surprising.
I think people
just starting running back on a run-heavy offense.
He was starting before he got injured. They just released Le'Veon Bell. They're not giving Tyson Williams any work. It's Devonta Freeman took the role while he was out, but they seemed to Latavius looked the best, and they gave him the most work before he went out. He might be coming back this week, but you want to get him now before people realize.
All right, your premature speculation player, Brian.
I'm going to go with the Giants' Sterling Shepard, who's only 33% rostered in Yahoo leagues right now. Shepard was a top 20 wide receiver to start the season. Has been dinged up. He might make his return this week against Tampa Bay. We'll talk about that game in a little bit. But he's the best wide receiver on the Giants when healthy. Mm-hmm. And Daniel Jones certainly looked his way early and often early in the year. He had target totals of 9, 10, 14, and it was like 3 pretty much full games. And the Giants usually playing from behind. I know Saquon Barkley's coming back, but Shepard could be a big-time helper, and he's available in, like I said, almost 70% of leagues right now.
He's going to be my Antonio Brown pivot this week.
There you go.
Oh, there you go. It does make sense. For what possible reason in the tight end apocalypse that we are living in, is Evan Ingram only rostered in 28% of fantasy leagues? That's absurd. He's scored in back-to-back games, and here's your clincher. Rest of the way schedule is second easiest for the Giants for tight ends. The only stopper he's got left is Chicago and deeply plus matchups against Philadelphia, the Chargers, Philadelphia again, along with a bunch of just generally positive matchups, Tampa Bay this week, Miami, Dallas, Washington. There's a lot of opportunities for Evan Ingram.
And The Eagles isn't just a good matchup. It's a great, Charmin
yeah,
soft.
Yeah, great point.
And most yards, touchdowns, and receptions to tight end.
Right, and he's going to face him twice.
And normally, like, you get docked for playing Travis Kelce, which the Eagles did. Kelce had 4 catches, 23 yards, no touchdowns, and they're still putting or giving up insane numbers to tight ends.
They had Slay shadow him that game.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think this is it's a go get Evan Engram. Let's go. Game on. Our last couple of matchups begin with the Steelers taking on the Chargers. Scott, we still at this stage, at least as we're talking right now, we don't know who the starting quarterback's going to be.
We don't.
Does it matter at this stage?
Yeah, I don't think it matters. They're preparing for Big Ben to be the starter, but they have not at this moment. They have not activated him. That could happen as late as tomorrow or whatever. I have either one on the bench. It doesn't matter.
I'm not surprised.
The Chargers allow the fewest completions, second fewest attempts, third fewest yards, and third fewest touchdowns. Mostly. Because they give up everything to running backs.
They do.
That's what happens. So I have Najee Harris with an A grade, an obvious A grade.
Is this our A of the week? Is he our fantasy aardvark right here?
Let's do it. Fantasy aardvark. Chargers have a bottom six run D in almost every single category, including allowing the most rushing yards and second most rushing TDs. A grade on Harris. Let's go back to the passing game, though. We're going to bounce around a little. I'm still giving Deontay Johnson a B grade. I can't help it. If Big Ben's in, Big Ben targets him all the time, no matter
what. Mason Rudolph did, too.
And exactly. Mason Rudolph did, too. I like him more with Ben, obviously.
Yeah.
But he's a lock for 5 to 9 catches, no matter who's in. And every receiver with 5-plus catches against the Chargers had 65-plus yards and or scored. The top target against the Chargers has gone over 100 yards 2 weeks in a row. It's, I believe, Devonta Smith and Justin Jefferson, if I'm remembering correctly.
Sounds right.
Chase Claypool, Ray McLeod. Nah. I'm not doing either of them. Chase Claypool, I don't trust him with his toe injury. I don't trust him. Mm-hmm.
In a tough matchup.
Yeah. And the second receiver usually does very little against the Chargers. They've only allowed 4 wide receiver touchdowns all year.
Hmm.
I don't even know if Deontay is going to score, but he should get the targets and yards. Pat Freiermuth, though. B grade, 29 targets in the last 4 weeks, resulting in 4-plus catches in all 4, 30 to 60 yards, and he scored thrice. Thrice, Charles.
Thrice, you say?
Yes. Big Ben really targets him in the red zone, but guess what? Mason Rudolph did, too, three times last week. He's got 7 red zone targets in the last 3 weeks. If they're going to use him down there, I'm going to give him a B. Justin Herbert, B grade. The Steelers' D has been really stout in their last 5 games, barely allowing over 200 yards and a score to checking notes here. Let's to Teddy, Geno, Baker, Fields, and Goff.
Wow.
Before that, they got torched for 284 yards per game and 2.25 touchdowns per game to Allen, Carr, Burrow, Rodgers, those types.
Mm-hmm.
I put Herbert more with that ladder.
He's much more in that category for sure.
And they're going to be missing T.J. Watt. They're going to be missing Joe Hayden. Minkah Fitzpatrick's probably not going to be activated in time. He's on the COVID list. He's probably going to be out. I have no problem giving Herbert a B. I'm teetering on an A, honestly, with all those players out. Keenan Allen's an obvious A for me. 11-plus targets in 3 straight, 5-plus catches in all of them. In all but 1 game this year, and 75-plus yards in 4 of his last 5. He's back. He's back with Mike. When Mike Williams went down, Keenan Allen came back. Mike Williams, C grade. If Hayden and Fitzpatrick don't go,
man.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I know. It's Mike C. Here's the problem. We give C grades to guys that are going to get you 40, 50, 60 yards a lot on this. We think 3-4 catches, 3-4 catches for 60 yards. We'll give him a C grade. Maybe they... Mike Williams has a better shot of blowing up than most of those guys. His ceiling is so much higher.
Okay, fine.
So I'm going to give him the C grade on he's that guy, plus he has a chance to be much bigger.
With the battered secondary, I'm listening to that.
Austin Eckler, obvious A grade. The only downside is the Steelers don't give up a lot of receiving work, but they've faced like 2 to 3 good passes. They've faced Swift, Aaron Jones, maybe Kenyon Drake. They haven't faced receiving backs,
mm-hmm.
so that's why they haven't given up a lot. A grade on Austin Eckler.
All right. Giants take on the Bucs on Monday night, Brian. This is a Giants running game that's expected to get Saquon Barkley back. What do you think about him in his first game back against a usually tough Bucs defense that was a bit yielding last week?
They were a bit yielding in terms of touchdowns. Antonio Gibson had the two, but he still only averaged 2.6 yards per carry. So
he got to like 65 yards on 20 carries. Yeah.
A little fluky there. Tampa Bay could be without defensive lineman Vita Vey. That would certainly bode well for Barkley. Either way, I'm giving Barkley a C if he comes back, but he is trending in the right direction. But as you're alluding to, a brutal matchup on the ground. But the Bucs have yielded 8-plus targets per game to running backs.
That's,
we all know, Barkley is a very able catcher. So a C floor. He does have B, maybe even A upside in this one, but I'd play it cautious. But I think you can trust that he will play. You know, it's a, like as you said, it's a Monday night game, so a little dicey. But if he's a scratch, I don't know if he can be a scratch if you haven't come back from injury yet. You probably can't.
They're
be
being
a scratch,
very, but very cagey with his status. But I think it's a lot of showmanship. There was talk that, you know, if they needed him last week, it was a bye week, they could have started him potentially. I think Barkley goes in this game, and I think he's closer to 100% than people know.
The Giants don't need Barkley; they need a new GM.
I think,
but anyway,
I don't even have a doubt. They mentioned using two backs. They mentioned that week one when Booker got four carries.
Yeah, right.
You know,
we're not
I think it's
that
Barkley
anymore.
Well, we're not going to talk about the other backs, though. But good point there. It's not a brutal matchup for the wide receivers, but what a mess at the position it is for the Giants. We'll start with Kenny Golladay. I'll give him a C, I guess. I had no idea that Golladay came back in week 9.
He did.
The Giants are coming off their bye. They didn't play in week 10. But Golladay did make his return in week 9. The Bucs are allowing more than one touchdown per game to wide receivers. Richard Sherman just went on IR. I don't know if that's addition by subtraction. It most likely
he
is.
He wasn't playing much for the last month or so anyway.
It's a banged-up secondary for Tampa Bay.
But is it? Sean Murphy Bunting probably comes back for this game. They've got both their starting outside corners. I think this secondary is rounding into form.
Okay.
Just my
point
opinion.
Taken. So I will still give Golladay the C. We'll talk about the other receivers in a minute just because he's healthy and Gettleman. Dave Gettleman, that is probably going to want to justify this horrific signing in primetime, I guess. So a C for Golladay, as we expect, or at least I expect the Giants to be playing in catch-up mode in this one. Sterling Shepard, we talked about in premature speculation, might make his return from a quad injury. Mm-hmm. He did practice on Friday, so he's leaning towards playing. I still would pick him up right now either way, even if he doesn't play in this game. But if he does play, he's still on the bench for me. You can't trust him to play going into Monday night. You certainly can't trust him to finish the game coming off a quad injury. So a bench grade for Sterling Shepard. Kadarius Toney. There's too many wide receivers to talk about on the Giants. They're all so mediocre. Toney
can be special, but they've hardly targeted him since he's come back.
He hasn't been special since popping off in week 5 when he went ham against the Cowboys.
And when no other receivers were healthy.
Right. And since then, he's been injured. And when he has played, he's totaled 8 catches for 71 scoreless yards across 3 games. He's on the bench. We could talk about Darius Slayton, but I don't really want to. Do you guys want to talk about Darius Slayton? Nope.
Not
okay. He's on the bench too. We will talk about Evan Engram again, who Charch had as his premature speculation player. I like that call, and I do like him enough in this game to give him a C. Mm. The Bucs are allowing 6.5 catches per game to opposing tight ends. Engram could very well lead the team in targets if it's not Saquon Barkley in this one. And lastly, we'll go to Daniel Jones. Got him on the bench. Over their last 6 games, Tampa Bay is allowing less than 2 passing touchdowns per game. The competition at quarterback hasn't been great. We're talking Taylor Heineke, Trevor Siemian / Jameis Winston, Justin Fields, Jalen Hurts, Jacoby Brissett, Mac Jones. How did the defending Super Bowl champs get this kind of...
That is a primrose path of quarterbacks right there.
Pretty pathetic competition, but guess what? Daniel Jones, pretty pathetic too. So he's on the bench. Jalen Hurts did rush for 2 touchdowns against Tampa Bay.
That's your angle right there.
That's the angle for Jones.
That's the only angle for Jones.
But he's really only viable as a in super flex 2 quarterback formats, and he's a deep reach even in those kinds of leagues. He's on the bench. All right, enough about the Giants. Over to the Bucs side. I'm going to give Mike Evans and Chris Godwin both a B. Godwin on the injury report again. He was last week with the foot injury. I expect him to play. Evans likely will be shadowed by James Bradberry, who is a very good cornerback, but he doesn't cover guys like Mike Evans every week, who has scored 7 times over his last 5 games. Chris Godwin is second in red zone targets behind only Cooper Kupp. The Giants have surrendered 7 wide receiver touchdowns over their last 5, so a B for both Evans and Godwin. Antonio Brown pretty much hasn't been ruled out, but most likely not going to play this week with the ankle injury. Has not practiced all week.
Is his personal chef going to play?
We're not going to get into any of that stuff. At least I don't want to. I get enough flack about things I say on
Twitter. How about just pay your help?
Exactly.
You know, just pay your help. That's all.
Yeah. Antonio Brown. I have a defeated joke, but I'm not going to go there if you remember. But anyway, Rob Gronkowski, though, didn't seem like he was going to play earlier in the week, but he's practiced in full on Thursday and Friday, looking like he will be a go on Monday night. I'll give him a C if he does play. He'll have a neutral matchup against the Giants, who haven't surrendered a tight end touchdown since week 4, but they are allowing 5 catches and 50 yards per game to the position. So a C for Gronk. Tom Brady, going to give him a B. It's not the easiest matchup, believe it or not. The Giants have allowed just 2 passing touchdowns over their last 3 games, and that's with Patrick Mahomes and Derek Carr in the mix during that span. The Giants have good cornerbacks in James Bradbury and Adoree Jackson, so not a smash spot for Brady, but he's pretty tough to bench, borderline impossible to bench, really, so a B for him. And lastly, for Tampa Bay, Leonard Fournette, going to give him a B. New York is top 10 in the most touches and yards allowed to backs, and this should be a positive game script for Lenny, who still dominated the backfield touches in a shockingly negative game script against Washington last week.
Yeah, basically, we did not expect that.
The bell cow for the Bucks, so a safe B for Fournette.
We've got a couple of minutes here at the end of the show, guys. Let's talk about some of the developments from Thursday night. Patriots backfield. Almost a dead even snap count for Damian Harris and Ramondre Stevenson. Scott, do you believe that this is going to be a roughly even split going forward?
That's tough. So Damian Harris got in a limited practice and then one full practice right before that game. Like that's all he got in for a workload, for a game plan for that game. I mean, it's only a practice and a half more than the other players. But
week before that, Ramondre Stevenson got 0 reps then came and dominated the snap count.
No, what I'm saying is maybe that's why Harris was a little bit more limited, is he wasn't prepped for that game plan. But yeah, that's a good point. I think it's going to be a pretty decent split, and it puts us in a position where we don't know who to start for any of the Patriots going forward, because Hunter Henry is so touchdown dependent. All the wide receivers are mishmash, and if this is a split, now it's just confusing as heck. I would still bank on Harris, but man, Ramondre Stevenson looks good.
He looks good, doesn't he?
He looks
the
so
thing
good.
About Stevenson, why pass I think catching? He's not going away. Exactly. He's the better pass catcher of the two. They're throwing to him. You know, coming out of college, we didn't necessarily expect Stevenson to be a pass catcher. And if James White were healthy, he probably wouldn't be. But they've decided they're going to throw to him. And if he's going to keep getting 3, 4, 5-ish, you know, targets and receptions per game, Ramondre Stevenson's going to be a guy to contend with.
Well, if I recall correctly, too, and he missed the second half of his last year in college due to injury, and if that hadn't happened, he would have been a much higher draft pick.
I do have a fun fact for you on that.
Oh, good.
Ramondre Stevenson had 5 targets in Week 10, the full game he played, Thursday night. 5 targets. Damian Harris has never had 5 targets in NFL, college, or high school a single game.
That does not surprise me. What do you think about Mac Jones going forward? We love the fact that he's a high completion rate guy, but the downfield passing hasn't happened yet. And at the end of the day, to get the kinds of box scores we want from a passing game, you got to be able to complete some 20-yard passes.
Yeah, he doesn't have the most impressive weapons either. He's a game manager. I mean, he's a great quarterback. He might be the best rookie quarterback in the class ahead of Fields and Trevor Lawrence. But it's going to be tough for him to crack the top 12 on a weekly basis. So he's kind of more of a bench
QB2,
player, really.
Yeah, second quarterback.
Feels like he had a lot of those at Alabama, though. Feels like he had a decent amount of hitting Jalen Waddle deep and stuff like that.
Oh, that worked out okay for him.
So maybe it'll come later.
Absolutely. If you want all of my player rankings, you can get, and if you miss any part of the show, you can get all the player rankings at guillotineleagues.com at no cost. That is totally free for you, guillotineleagues.com. Thank you for listening today. If you missed any part of this broadcast over there, you can check out the podcast version of Fantasy Football Weekly and vice versa. If you're listening on the podcast, you may be able to find us over the air on your local sports talk radio station. Best of luck in week 11. Talk to you in a week, everybody. Bye-bye. Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.